Oh, I guess. Just to say that the chairperson won't be available today, and he has requested Honorable Kongobele to stand in for him. I don't know if there's any objection to him chairing this meeting for today. Honorable Michael.
Just a question. On our notice, it says the meeting starts at 10 and carries on until 1. But I see that we have a plenary session of Parliament that begins at 12. So I trust we're going to break at 12 so that we can be in the Parliament.
I think we'll be done by then. Like, I mean, we don't have much to say. Like, so I think by around about half past 11, we should be out of here.
Good morning, honourable members. This meeting is subsequent to the previous one we had. If honourable members remember, it was suggested in the last meeting that we need to have a session where there's a proper transitional process from the previous regime to the current regime so that we can start on a proper footing. In other words, today it's a lot more of an information session interacting with that so that we start on a very sound platform to do our work as we move forward to ensure minimum continuity where there is need for that. And in our agenda, we have got, in other words, the meeting has been declared open, but item 2 is apologies, but I wanted to check if members have got an item to propose in that before we proceed. If not, if anyone can help us to adopt it so that we can proceed. Honourable member? Okay. I always believe that people should speak to the mic.
Steve Swart proposes we adopt the agenda, seconded by Mr. Jeffries, but he'll speak for himself. Second the adoption of the agenda.
The agenda has been proposed and adoption and seconded. Any counter? There being no counter, then we proceed. Do we have any apologies?
Honorable Jeffrey, just to say that we have apologies. One from the IFP, Honorable von der Merwe isn't coming. The second one is from Honorable Malale from the ANC. And the third one is from Honorable Ntapane from the UDA.
Yeah, just wondered, do you have to give reasons for apologies? I mean, if I, for example, wake up and I decide, look, I'd rather attend my attorney's practice in Pretoria, and I'd rather do that than come to the Justice Committee, is that fine? Do I just send in the apologies?
I think maybe I would propose that we don't handle that matter today. But it's an important matter if we are to maintain what we call a multi-party committee discipline. There are party disciplines, but there's a multi-party discipline in a committee like this. And I think we need to discuss that, probably have a way of dealing with that, because I cannot imagine a situation where it is easy just to not to come to this meeting and the committee does nothing about it. Thanks very much. Can we then proceed if there are no other apologies? Item 2, members. Honorable members, item 2 comprises of documents that are going to be presented before us. For instance, at a high level, there are two documents there. but broken down, they become four documents in the sense that legacy report is a document that is going to be presented on its own, and the five-year review, there are about three documents that are going to be presented. And then we'll interact with those, and I hope by 11:30 we will be through. Chief, can you then lead us with your team?
Just to say that mine is going to be a very short one. I think last week there is a document that I sent to all members, which was a legacy report for the committee. It was drafted by committee section. So officially it has got no status in this committee, so it's not a committee document as such. The reason why we drafted the document, we were advised that we should have the document so that new members of this committee can get an idea, a sense of what happened from 2004 until early this year. And then the purpose of trying to have this kind of a meeting, we are trying to, just to introduce members to the issues before the committee, and trying to get your assistance in shaping the program for this committee going forward. Slide one there, we start with the function of the committee. I'll start with the first one would be to exercise oversight over the department and entities. We consider legislation referred to the committee. And in most instances, like most of our meetings that we convene, we are mainly dealing with legislation from the department. We also consider international agreement referred to us. Consider the budget of the department and its entities. We facilitate parliamentary public hearings, public participation in parliamentary processes. And we also facilitate appointments to statutory bodies. We have the Human Rights Commission, Public Protector, CGE. I think in the next coming weeks, we are likely to start appointing members, commissioners for the Human Rights Commission. We also consider various matters referred to us in terms of legislation, rules of parliament and resolution. One example there will be sometimes we get magistrates who have been suspended, and such kind of issues come before us to process. Number two, we oversee the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the NPA, Public Protector, Human Rights Commission, CGE, and the Board of Sheriffs. The method of work for this committee, I think it's something that started around about maybe it was the end of 2007 or early last year. Normally, we are expected to meet Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. Given the workload that we have, there's so much to be done in this committee. Sometimes, it's not easy for us, even if we sit every day, it's not simple for us to, deal with all the issues before the committee. So what has happened in the past? We had subcommittees chaired by different people, but then the chairperson of the committee, remains responsible for everything that is happening in those subcommittees. So, for instance, we might say, "Ora Regible Jeffrey, since he's a lawyer, then he's going to guide us on this and this," and then there will be members there assisting him. Once they have done whatever they are expected to do, they'll come back and report back to the full committee, which will take decisions. When it comes to public hearings, last year there was this thing of saying that Parliament isn't accessible to everyone. There are people, for instance, in KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, who are too far. So there was this suggestion that we should try and take our public hearings to provinces. That we did with the Scorpions and the review of the criminal justice system. The issue is whether, you know, that method of work is going to continue given the budgetary constraints that we have at the moment. We had before us the traditional courts bill last year, during the last parliament. There was a suggestion that since that bill mainly affects people who are far away from Cape Town, we should have public hearings in those places. There was also a recommendation by the previous committee that those public hearings should take place in provinces. Whether that is going to happen or not, like, you know, I think the committee will have to decide, or Parliament as well. And then there's another issue of joint committee meetings with the Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Affairs. Normally, we will have some papers referred to us by the department with very tight deadlines. We pass the bill, we refer to the NCOP. The NCOP makes amendments, and the bill is referred back to us. And we find that we only have a day or two to process those amendments. So such kind of issues, like, I mean, if, for instance, we invite the NCOP component to some of our meetings, you know, such kind of problems, you know, such kind of pressures can be, you know, avoided. The number of meetings held by this committee, I know, like, when members were appointed to serve in this committee, I had some inquiries from some members wanting to know how busy this committee is. And as a result, you know, some of them are no longer with us. Just to say, 2005, 43 minutes, meetings, 2006, 54, 2007, 59, last year we had 83. And as you can see, the numbers keep on increasing. This year, early this year, we had run about 12, and this is the fourth, or third or fourth for this committee. And in all those meetings, mostly we are dealing with legislation. So basically, most of the time, our program, you know, is dictated by the department. When it comes to stakeholders, I've just, you know, mentioned a few there. We have the Law Society represented today by Zelna Johnson at the back there. The General Council of the Bar, Child Justice Alliance, Fathers for Justice, Open Democracy Advice Center, Women's Legal Center, Legal Resource Center, the House of Traditional Leaders as well, Magistrate Associations, COSATU, IDASA, and Institute for Security Studies. There are other stakeholders, mostly depending on what issues we'll be considering before the committee, so, but these are the ones that we normally interact with. Legislation referred to, legislation and papers referred to this committee, I do not have the numbers here, but the document that I submitted to you late last week or early this week, I think it has some of those details. Just to say that I think if we were to go to the records, we might find that most of the committee, the bills passed in Parliament were passed by this committee. Right now, we have some bills that we refer to us, which I think they have lapsed. Whether they will be, you know, coming back to us or not, we don't know as yet. the department hasn't as yet given an indication of what will be coming before us. But if we remember during the budget briefing, the DG was saying that he was looking at introducing between 12 and 15 bills for this year. So we should just wait for those to come. Oversight. Parliament has been saying that it hasn't been playing its oversight roles the way it should be. So more emphasis is going to be placed on oversight visits. But if we look, according to the records that I have from previous secretaries, there have been very few oversight visits by this commission. I couldn't get any indication of any oversight visit from 2004, 2005, 2006, or 2007, but perhaps members who were in this committee during that period might indicate if there were any oversight trips undertaken. There is one in 2008 to Portsmouth Prison to consider the position of awaiting trial prisoners. We had one to Bloemfontein, Mangaung One Stop Child Justice Center, and Port Elizabeth Marina One Stop Child Justice Center. We undertook those visits when we were processing the child justice bill, and we wanted to just to establish how those courts were functioning before we finalized the bill. And at the moment, Parliament has been saying that there's no budget, there's no money for this term. So whether that is going to compromise oversight or not, I mean, it remains to be seen. And at the same time, if we are going to get 12 to 15 bills from the department, then the question is whether we will have time to do those things. When it comes to study tours, I could only get two, one to the UK. Fortunately, Honorable Sibanyoni is here. I think he was one of the delegates. And I'm told that the papers was the trip was around drafting of legislation. They wanted to see how legislation in other countries relating to superior courts is structured. The relationship between the judiciary and the executive is a very important one for our committee at the moment. Just to say that that report from that previous committee might be relevant, you know, given the recent debates around separation of power, independence of the judiciary, the minister's final responsibility when it relates to the NPA and the transformation of the judiciary. And when I tried to establish the status of that report, it wasn't adopted by that by the committee. So if members want, I don't know, I can provide copies of that report, but then they should just bear in mind that it's not an official document in Parliament. It's the editorial report. Yeah, number eight. Yeah. And then during this very same year, there was also another one to India, International Conference for Chief Justices of the World. And then number nine, when it comes to the challenges relating to this committee, the first one there, you know, is creating a balance between the committee's civil legislative program and oversight responsibilities. It has been, you know, very, very difficult. If we remember, we didn't have, you know, a full parliamentary given the recent elections, and I think towards the end of last year, most committees were not meeting. So there was a problem. At some stages, like we had to even meet during recess period, constituency period, so that we could finalize everything that was referred to us. Then there is a challenge of too many meetings, but I just said Honorable Swart saying that he enjoys it that way, so I won't be complaining. Just to say that I understand that some of our members here are serving in other committees. So if we will be expected to meet every day, we will have Honorable Sitole saying that she has to go to intelligence. So we might find that at some stages you're going to come here with only 4 or 5 members and then others are attending to other committees. Then the quorum is always there, then when we have to pass whatever is referred to us, we have to run around looking for members to have a quorum. Refer us to committee, to the committee with very tight deadlines from the department. Just to say that yesterday I think I received a referral to our core committee, which is the Constitution 17th Amendment Bill. Normally, we'll get a bill that we have to process, and you find that maybe we have a deadline that is in another legislation that is currently in existence. But when you look at the period between the referral and the deadline, you find that it's a very short period. And what do we do when we have such a very tight deadline? That is where, we end up having accusations, like people saying that Parliament is simply rubber stamping whatever the executive is doing. Like I said, we were told that there will be 12 to 15 bills coming before this committee. It's July now. Where are those bills, 12 to 15? If we are to pass those bills before November and there are 12 to 15 in total, and I mean, when how are we going to do that in around about 3 or 4 months? So the solution there will be to meet every day. That means Fridays as well. I know that members don't like Friday meetings. And then subcommittees also. Sundays, Honorable Sir has to go to church, so he won't be here. So we end up having to establish subcommittees to help us in processing those bills fast if possible. Then we have the requirement to confer with other committees. If you remember last year, we had the DSO bill, 2 bills relating to the DSO. We had to confer with safety and security. That means that, at some stages, we will have to suspend our program and deal with whatever, we are supposed to confer on with the other committee. We have the DNA bill that was before Parliament recently. We were told that it will be coming back to this committee. But whether we'll be required to confer with the Portfolio Committee on Police, I don't know, it might happen. Last one there is public hearings in provinces. They are very time consuming and tiresome. Last year, I think for the criminal justice system, I think it was over 2 weeks, Christine. So over 2 weeks in provinces. The suggestion now is that if we have public hearings on traditional court bill, we might end up having to spend 3 days, for instance, in KZN, given the size of KZN. Maybe if you go to Limpopo, although it's not very big, since it is my province, I might want us to spend 2 or 3 days there. So at the end, you might find that for 3 to 4 weeks, you are in provinces. And you also have other responsibilities in Parliament. When it comes to outstanding issues, we have those bills that were before the committee that have since lapsed. I hope maybe they will be referred back to us or revived by Parliament. We also had papers relating to the suspension of magistrates. They are going to come back as well. The annual reports of the department and its entities, all of them, we still haven't considered them. And August, it's very close, and by then we'll be having another set of annual reports, so we might end up having annual reports from last year and this year that we have to consider at the same time. And we also have problems in various bodies reporting to this committee, CGE for instance, Human Rights Commission, there are commissioners who are about to leave office, the public protector is leaving as well. There was a suggestion from the previous chairperson that perhaps we should also call the NPA, you know, to discuss issues around the Nicholson judgment, the meaning of the minister's final responsibility over the NPA, things like those, and there are also, you know, a number of issues that we have to follow up on. Just to say that since 94, we have passed a number of legislation, whether those acts are being, you know, implemented the way we wanted them to be implemented, we don't know, so that's another issue that we have to follow up on. So I think that is where I'm going to end up, and then I will invite Gillian to continue with the presentation. Okay.
I think I remember the number of issues that have been raised. And I want to agree with Arbu Smash that for a fruitful information session, we need to engage with them in a very specific way. For instance, amongst other issues is the issue of the volume of the programming. That is set down the entire meeting calendar for the year. Are we going to deal with the volume of work? I'm just picking up those issues that need our response. And then the issues of bills that is what you call that. What is our role with regard to that? Should we go and fetch them or should we keep quiet? And, you know, we need to be advised by the people who have been here. What do we do in anticipation of the 12 bills coming this year? How are we going to approach the oversight? Because oversight is not just about visits. Visits is an element of oversight. It's a bigger thing than that. While issues of trips, members will forgive me, I'm really enthusiastic about that. The committee is enthusiastic. I'm not an enthusiast of trips. There is an area where he is articulating challenges, a balance between the legislative program versus oversight. Again, it's programming. That one falls under programming. Again, planning meetings is under programming. Tight deadlines, all those kind of things, they fall under programming. And my sense, honorable members, is that I'm not sure how this committee in the past has dealt with regard to these issues. The ideal way where we have interfaced some of us is that you would have as a committee probably a ready session where you look at all these issues in a broader protocol and come out in anticipation with how do you intend to conduct yourself to cope with whatever you seem to be facing. But can we actually just make contributions around those issues so that we close that? I know you, but I'm very
bothered. It seems to me on programming that
we will be legislating and nothing else, and I think that we should not think in terms of going on any oversight trips for starters. It seems to me we will simply be legislating if this dozen of bills come through. As to past experience in the committee, I am probably of limited yet curiously relevant help here, because in the days when I was on this committee, we were producing the entire corpus of the new laws of the Democratic South Africa. We did nothing but legislate. And there was at least one parliament, maybe two, when we did nothing but legislate, and oversight only started to be exercised or concentrated on, I think, at the beginning of the last parliament. And it seems to me that not much is going to change. It seems to me we will be concentrating on legislation, and I don't think we should travel. I have two other points, but shall I deal with them later if we're talking programming now? Because they're very brief. One is really clarification. I think I heard Vonani say that we would be interviewing and appointing the Human Rights Commission people, and I must say I thoroughly approve. That has always been done in an ad hoc committee, and that is possibly one of the reasons why the relationship between this committee and the TAP 9 bodies has never really established itself. And so if this committee is appointing the commissioners into the vacancies, yes, I thoroughly approve. But there's a matter we must look at. I've in fact written to the speaker about it on behalf of my party. And that's the fact that they've advertised only for 5 vacancies, whereas the hopelessly outdated Human Rights Commission Act, as it stands, asks for 11. The Human Rights Commission Act is based on the interim constitution. It was never adjusted to the 96 constitution. So really, I wonder if we as a committee shouldn't initiate that legislation. The deputy minister, according to one of your reports and stuff that I've seen, said that there was a new a bill in advanced form sitting somewhere in the ministry. But, you know, if they can't give it to us now, I wonder if we shouldn't initiate an adjusted and updated bill. But thank you. That just confirms we will be doing the interviewing, and I think that is just the way it ought to be. The other one is simply a response. Vonani indicated that there was a report emanating from the journey to the United Kingdom. I personally would like to have a copy of that report, because I do ask myself where various things come from, such as the sudden enthusiasm for what is called the Commonwealth model when we are a constitutional state. And I say that in respect of the various bills coming to us. So I personally would like a copy of that. Thank you.
Maybe just start by disappointing Honourable Smuts.
You want to go travel?
Sorry? No. Ms. van der Merwe will want to travel. I mean, I just wanted to point out to the acting chair that when there's an international trip,
yes,
he will be
difference.
There.
Even I might be interested.
but just as far as I think with respect to the input, we don't facilitate the appointments to the statutory bodies. Usually, the debate can be around whether we should or not. We do handle their budget, but usually it's ad hoc committees that get appointed, and that has been the past in the recent years. Gender Commission, Human Rights Commission, Public Protector, and my sense was that was going to happen this time again. I think issues may be the workload of this committee, but there's a broader issue. I mean, one of the things that's not here that should be here, that we did speak about last time, was the whole issue of the so-called Asmal report and the fact that we need to get a copy. I think it was distributed, but the relationship between the Chapter 9s and the National Assembly is something that needs to be looked at. One of the issues was, should there be a standing committee dealing with the Chapter 9 specifically? In other words, take them away from us. The other Chapter 9s are scattered around Electoral Commission in Home Affairs, or what's it called? Yeah, Home Affairs.
Communications
for ICASA. Whether that is a Chapter 9 is another whole debate. It's mentioned
is.
In Chapter 9, but it doesn't have the same things applying to it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm not. So what I'm just basically saying is that's not correct what has been put here, and it's something that maybe needs to be checked on. The other body under 2, just some sort of corrections, the other body under 2 that we've got to oversee is the Legal Aid Board, and that's quite crucial. And then under the functions of the committee as well, there are functions that we have to perform in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. So it's not just the budget. There's also the annual reports, I think, that have to be overseen in September. So I think this report should be just supplemented so that we have a more accurate, a completer, fuller document. Then on the issue of... Well, what I'm just saying is there are gaps. So the definitely in September, we're going to have to do stuff for the PFMA. It basically would be looking at the department's annual report, I think it is. I can't remember, unfortunately, all the detail, but we need to have that down so we have a completed list. Then when it comes to legislation, I mean, firstly, with the lapse bills, there are two. There's a traditional courts bill, which in terms of the repeal of the Black Administration Act, traditional courts will lapse if there is no legislation by the end of the year. Hence the traditional courts bill. Now what we've done before is we had to amend that section of the repeal bill for more time. We may have to do the same again. But at this stage, the traditional courts bill has to be passed by Parliament, both houses, by the end of the year. So that's one of the lapse bills that the committee had been dealing with. The previous chair had set up a team of representatives from the House of Traditional Leaders, representatives from NGOs to work with a subcommittee. The other one, which is the sort of bill, is the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Bill. I think it's down as the DNA Bill. And that was, because of the committee's workload at the time, that was sent to an ad hoc committee. Now, with both those bills, we can't go and fetch them. The minister has the Criminal Law Forensic Procedures Bill.
The DNA.
And it's what Ani said is the DNA Bill. Now, with both those bills, the minister has to indicate that he wants them revived. So we actually can't do anything. There is an overlap with the forensic procedures between the ad hoc committee consisted of members of the Justice Committee and Safety and Security. But what I'm just trying to say is we've got to see what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the minister would be indicating pretty soon. Ministers were meant to tell the leader of government business by yesterday what their legislative program was or is intended to be. But then the 12 bills, so basically on the lapsing, we've got to wait. On the 12 bills, I don't know what the minuting is, but I suppose it's a fact. The department's record as far as meeting its bill deadlines is not particularly good. So I would be very surprised if 12 bills do get tabled in Parliament before the end of the year. But I think what would be useful is to have an input from the department as to what is the legislation and where is it. You know, when is it going to Cabinet, when is it likely to be tabled, what does it entail, that kind of thing. And I think we can only properly plan our program. So unlike Honourable Smuts, who's assuming, I think we can only plan our program once we've had that input. We've then going to have to properly prioritise to say these are the bills that we have to deal with, like maybe traditional courts because of the statutory deadline. These are the bills that can go into next year, that kind of thing. But we can only do that once we've had an input from the department as to where things are. Once we've got that, we can also then decide how we're going to deal with it. So the previous chair set up assigned members responsibility for bills, and there was sort of a subcommittee to process those bills, which then reported back to the full committee. That was because of the legislative workload. We may need to do the same this time. So really what I'm saying is it's very difficult to plan the program, decide what we can do or can't do without having that input and the detailed input, given the problems of the department in terms of managing to keep to their deadlines. Having said that, though, I think we need to try and build in... Oh, on the issue of public hearings, sorry. I think we need to... That would depend on the nature of the bills. I mean, even with a traditional courts bill, it's a Section 76 bill. The NCOP is going to have provincial hearings. So I think we need to look quite carefully at do we need to repeat that.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes NA committees have done that, but it's something we've got to consider quite carefully. We did it with the Scorpions bills because they were Section 75 and the NCOP was not going to have a hearing, and in fact we did the hearings jointly with them. But for us to go to provinces and have hearings and then after we finish the bill, the NCOP has to do the same, is you're going to have then two hearings in one province. So I'm just saying we need to be careful with that. Oversight, I do think that I mean, obviously there's the issue, there were outstanding issues from the budget process that we need to engage with the department at the central level, but I do think some visits to courts are quite essential, and we do need to try and factor them into the program. Because you can get a nice report from the, as we seem to have here, from the officials, and you get to a court and you find the reality is actually quite different. So really then, in short, Chair, what I'm saying is legislative program we need to urgently get from the department. Once we've got that, we can factor in. Yeah, okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Just to place us in context, whilst we are a new parliament, last year's program was also dramatically truncated and cut because of the preparations for the elections. And in fact, I've got a draft program for last year where it was admitted that we wouldn't be able to do enough oversight, and the focus was mainly on legislation because of it being an election year. So we need to bear in mind that oversight has not happened to the sufficient degree, even in the previous parliament, and we really need to look at that. I would agree with you that we need to have a strategic session with the department where it comes to the 12 bills. Clearly we're not going to get through 12. We need to prioritize them. My understanding is that, for example, the minister indicated that the forensics bill was already tabled. It might not be so, but he indicated that that would be tabled. But we need to prioritize what is the key thing. After what JJ said about the traditional courts bill, clearly that is important. What we found previously worked very well was the subcommittees. To give you an example, the Child Justice Bill took 8 years to finalise. And when the Honourable Karim took over as chairperson, it was finalised within a few months. With a subcommittee sitting, with NGOs that had a particular interest and experts sitting in on the subcommittee and assisting. Now that's obviously a debate that needs to take place in this Parliament. To what degree can NGOs sit in and participate? But that was very useful. We finalised that Child Justice Bill very quickly with subcommittees. Then just on the issue of the magistrates is a concern, so because there are timelines with the Magistrates Commission with suspensions. If the Magistrates Commission has suspended someone, then it's got to come to Parliament within a certain timeline. And if we don't attend to it within the limit, the timeline set down, then that suspension by the Magistrates Commission lapses and they've got to start again. So we need to get a full briefing as to which magistrates have been suspended, which are waiting a resolution from the National Assembly. That is very key. I believe we're going to have a degree of oversight as well, because we've already said we're going to meet with the department quarterly. Now, we said that last Parliament as well, and we never met with them quarterly. We might not be able to do it, but at least the intention is there for them to come back in September or something and give us a feedback. Why it is important is because of the PFMA requirements that JJ pointed out, that we've got to look at the strategic plans. But secondly, an issue that is going to come up early next year that we've got to gear ourselves for is the fact that we as MPs are able to amend the budget. So clearly, we've got to prepare ourselves sufficiently to be able to motivate whether this department's budget is sufficient and whether we as a portfolio committee want to motivate a change in the department's budget to National Treasury. So that is a huge brand new element that is coming in, and that we might well be able to attend to that early next year when it kicks in. But that is a very important point. I can suggest that on the issue of oversight, without prejudice in other provinces, but we can literally here, we can have a surprise visit. We have got judicial officers and courts that sit in the same building as Parliament, across the way here, 120 Plain Street. If you go up to the 8th floor, the family advocates sit there. We could go and visit them in a question of an hour or two, just pop in and see what's going on there. The other courts that are just, but again, you are then benefiting only the Western Cape. But at least we will be doing some oversight. Polesmore Prison, where there was follow-up visits to be done. So I think a strategic session definitely needs to be done, and I would fully support that with bearing in mind all these aspects. Thank you, Chairperson. Just one last point is the Criminal Justice Review. A lot of people are asking it. It came up yesterday in the Correctional Services debate where they said it is presenting challenges to other departments. So that's an ongoing issue that clearly needs to, we need feedback on that as a matter of urgency. How far is that happening? And with the State President Zuma's new approach of coordination and without departments working in silos, I think we might well need to meet with other portfolio committees to look at that broader criminal justice review as to how we don't operate in silos, but that there's a more integration between the different departments forming the criminal justice review. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think I'm sedated by your input. I'm not looking at the chat. We're in trouble in terms of class, let's not repeat. We're only 10, 40 minutes to go before we finish.
Yeah, regularly, Chairperson, I wanted to say that, slightly the previous comments have covered me. I want to remark on the Chairperson saying that some of us are serving in other committees. Briefly to emphasize that, but I suppose we've got Justice having their members as the main committee, Justice as the main committee, and then also to say the subcommittees, I 100% support. It worked very well last year. For example, we were able to finish the jurisdiction of criminal courts bill and the like. And then maybe, Chairperson, also to say, in so far as the 12 bills are concerned, but there are priorities. For example, specifically, I will say the legal practice bill that deals with the... You see? Okay. 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 Lastly, the report omitted one overseas visit, the New Zealand visit. I think it was in December 2004. I'm not sure of the date, but it was at the beginning of the term.
Some of what I wanted to say has been touched on, but the main question was on the overlap. I mean, correctional services does go to prisons for oversight. And I'm just wondering how many departments or ministries kind of function overlap with ours, and how do you deal with that in terms of oversight and also workload?
I think that probably the quickest way I propose to deal with this is that this committee might not be able to sit in this session and say what happens by which day. I think that the table should take into consideration input made. For instance, I think members have said we need to be clear what our role will be with regard to appointment of commissions. There has been some. That needs to be clear so that there is no confusion around that. And then the other issue is, which was said in the previous meeting, the ASMA report, I'm not sure it has been forgotten, because it was supposed to be part of this meeting. And then the other issue is, which is very key, I hope the support team will actually take this into account. What JJ is saying is that though we have no choice, the bulk of our program will be legislation, there are essential oversight issues that have to be done, as the PSMA or the quality graphic. Amongst others, annual report and so on. Those must be factored in. Doesn't matter what we do. Otherwise, we've got no reason to be here. So we need to find a balance between those. And added to that is what Honorable Member Swal said. I don't know if that was or JJ who said, visits to court. We may not have visits, but visits to court will be very crucial in terms of promoting visibility of the role of Parliament with regard to those, and probably fast-tracking changes that are necessary. The other issue is, if I had on the issue that traditional court says that bill ideally was supposed to be finalized this year, but if it's not possible, there is an amendment process that has to be factored in so that you sustain the operation as it is now. We need to also have a response to that. And I think Honorable JJ also is guiding us well when he says, let us have the department with the 12 anticipated submissions to present to the committee, because our program can only make sense once that interaction has what we call have taken place. The other issue is, I think members are saying, nature of the of bills will determine the nature of public hearing. But however, we should do it in a smart and a coordinated way, avoid duplications between us and NCOP. I think those should be taken into account. And I think that the general view agreement around the value of subcommittees in actually dealing with the load of our work. And then the concerns around coordination with the magistrate court so that we play our role at the right time. And then again, I think the question of quarterly meetings with the department falls squarely with the essential elements of our oversight. And I think we need to find a way on how we're going to handle that. And then generally, and the justice, what is this, criminal justice review, the need to get a feedback. What I'm saying is that I want to request the committee not to further engage on this matter, but to say these are the issues that have come. I think the table needs to sit down and then propose how all these issues are going to be handled, taking things that can't work of the time that I suppose. Okay. Taken by public hearings, and there's a need to balance between their essentiality and with the other work that's supposed to be done. Let the view therefore is that the nature of the bill will determine the nature of the public hearing. But the view is that it must be done in a smart and a well coordinated way. But you don't go and do the same thing in the same province where the issue, how do you coordinate and work with them? So I think there's a proposal with regard to that. Who now is going to present?
It will be Gillian. Just to say that some of the issues that have been raised, for example, the size of the Human Rights Commission, the Arsenal report, they are covered in the presentations that are going to follow, so there will be issues around those.
I'm going to be a bit difficult to the late presenter. The subsequent presenter is always suffering the consequences of the mistakes of the first presenter. So we'll accept that. Welcome, Ivo.
Bonani.
Sorry. You want to explain that, Raman? Why are we giving the copies of the questions of the day?
Unfortunately, it's coming to us.
This committee deals with all the constitutional amendments. If they, as they sometimes do, they affect provincial and local government or cooperative governance now or treasury, we then have to consult those committees. But every constitutional amendment will come here. Yeah, and I think it's published for comment. It's not introduced yet, so it's for information purposes.
Gillian. Yeah, thank you. thank you. Yeah, sorry, my name is Gillian Nesbitt. I'm with the research unit. I'm assigned to the committee, along with Sue Ann. I'm going to be brief because I think that the following presentations might be more relevant in terms of looking forward. Sue Ann's going to present on SONA, and Christine is going to present on, as we've mentioned, the Chapter 9s, and also issues that the committee may wish to consider in terms of oversight. If I can just speak briefly then, the five-year review document was produced for purposes, it's really a retrospective document. It was really intended to assist members, particularly new members coming to the committee, just to give them an overview of the work of the department and some of the work done by the previous committees. So it's really looking at annual reports and the medium-term strategic framework document and budget documents. The idea behind this presentation is just to provide briefly for the committee's consideration an overview of some of the key policy initiatives undertaken by the department and just a couple of the oversight issues raised by the previous committee. These issues this committee may want to follow up in terms of feedback from the department. I just want to place it in context of the department's three strategic goals in terms of improving access to justice, enhancing organizational efficiency, and transforming justice, whether through the legal profession, the judiciary, or the review of the criminal justice program. I think it's also important, I think this did come up as an issue, to place the department within the justice, crime prevention, and security cluster. It doesn't work alone. It's supposed to work with these other departments, and it does in terms of development planning, and there are group meetings. A key focus of this activity is the functioning of the criminal justice system, which keeps coming up. And there is a program, the Integrated Justice System Program, which does seek to improve case flow management and in terms of moving people and cases through the justice system chain. Just to look quickly at four of the key policy initiatives from the department. Re-Aga Boswa, or We Are Rebuilding, was piloted in 2004. It was, and I think it still is, a flagship project of the department. It's fundamental to court operations. It involved a change to separate judicial and administrative functions, created a senior level, management level at the courts, and tried to decentralize functions to the courts. Initially, the idea was to remove the regional power. So the court functions were decentralized to the court. Court managers would be appointed, area court managers would be appointed, and that would link to the national office. With the new DG, that changed, and regional powers have been maintained. The consequence of that is that the program was supposed to be implemented over 5 years, but it's taking longer than that. Although court managers and area court managers and court operation managers have been appointed, there has been no the intention was to improve court performance, and in terms of processing cases and court hours, that there's been a limited improvement, but that is, I think, because the scope of the model did change, and I think that might feed into perhaps in terms of oversight of the courts if the committee chooses to visit. Another key program has been case flow management. That also feeds into one of the strategic elements of improving overall efficiency in the system. Case flow management, the idea is to deal with cases from the time they enter the system to the time they leave, i.e. the time the docket comes to SAPS through while the accused person is processed through the courts and through correctional services. The idea was to introduce two main processes, case flow management guidelines that would ensure smooth functioning, as I say, from SAPS right through, and also through technology. They introduced the e-scheduler program, which is registers court appearances, post-moment dates, the number of times that the matter's been on the roll, so that matters can be tracked. E-Scheduler has been expanded now to the integrated case management system, and they're expanding that from a criminal aspect to include a civil aspect. So I think that's also quite important, and the committee may want feedback on how that's being rolled out and whether it's actually having an effect. The review of the criminal justice system, Sue Ann's going to speak to that, but I just want to mention quickly that there is a two-phase process underway, although the department's not providing much information to us on exactly the scope. We do know that there's a... The process was placed in the office for the Deputy Minister, but we're not sure whether the new Deputy Minister will maintain that role or will it be outsourced to somebody else. The two-phase process is a research review which looks at long-term goals to remove obstacles in the system. That's been undertaken by KPMG, and I think a report has been produced which is going to go before the DG, so the committee might want to look at that. And also then implementation of the seven-point plan through quick fixes, one of which has been through legislation. With members have already looked at, considered the Forensics Procedure Bill. And last year, the Criminal Procedure Amendment Act looked at trying to fast-track video postponement remanding criminal cases instead of transporting prisoners from courts to or from the correctional services to courts. They would do it through video conferencing, which saved time, helped with security. So that's one of the initiatives. Operation Zondlo, just quickly, it's been quite a successful program, but the committee may want to consider just getting feedback from the department in terms of serious problems with maintenance. It was rolled out in 2005 and it has been quite successful. They've appointed maintenance officers, investigators. There's been a reduction in the backlog and defaulters are being traced. Once again, this points to modernization of the system because they've introduced central electronic funds transfer unit to try and make it easier for people on the ground. Hopefully they're trying to encourage people to open bank accounts so maintenance money can be transferred directly into bank accounts rather than people having to travel long distances to the courts. Just very quickly, a couple of oversight issues. As was mentioned, the previous committee was big on subcommittees, which were fantastic. One of the subcommittees was the Master of the High Court. There was a meeting with stakeholders and with the department. There was also a meeting with the minister. The department made certain commitments, hoping that maybe the committee will consider following up because the Master's Office, I think there's still quite serious problems. I think this was raised by one of the members over the budget. Also, in management of monies and trust, the department's forming a public-private partnership that the committee may want to keep an eye on. If there's a bid process involved, it's going to be outsourced. There's supposed to be a skills transfer from the private sector to the department. So I think it might be worth the department just making sure that bid process is followed through properly. The traditional courts bill, that was outstanding. Also a subcommittee, the task team did a lot of work on that. They produced a report which I think has been distributed to the committee. And which I think is a good basis to start, although as the Honourable Jeffries have already mentioned, it can be there can be an extension there. Thank you very much. Sorry about the speedy delivery, but I just want to give my colleagues a chance to also contribute.
Remember, I've made the issue where we want our
but it's with a U.
Well, my topic, I'm going to briefly present the justice perspective on the State of the Nation address. The justice perspective of the State of the Nation. Basically, the aim of this presentation is to inform the committee of issues that will affect the Department of Justice and in turn affect the committee in its legislative and oversight functions. To go to the State of the Nation address, there were various issues that were mentioned that would affect the justice department and hence the committee, they've been grouped under two themes. One is the revamp of the criminal justice system, and the second one is the transformation of the judiciary. With regard to the revamp of the criminal justice system, the transformation of the judiciary. With regard to the revamp of the criminal justice system, this has been a recurring theme in previous State of the Nation addresses, and the various things that the 2009 SONA mentioned was establishing a transformed, integrated, modernized, properly resourced, and well-managed criminal justice system. Secondly, improving the efficiency of the courts and the performance of prosecutors. And thirdly, increasing the number of prosecutors and legal aid board personnel. Regarding these measures that needs to be taken by the department, regarding the first one, the criminal justice system, some of the steps taken by the department at present include the review of the criminal justice system. Now, as Gillian mentioned, there are two parallel processes taking place, and the committee may want to oversee the draft report that we keep hearing about, and secondly, the implementation of the 7-point plan. Further, regarding pulling in on human, regarding vacancies, the department has decreased its vacancies to 12%. However, it has stated that it intends filling 1,371 vacancies the next financial year. So that is something the department, the committee may want to oversee, in light of the fact that the department has problems recruiting legal personnel. With regard to employment equity, it intends increasing the number of senior female managers to 50%. With regard to legislation emanating from the criminal justice review, as has been mentioned, the Criminal Procedure Amendment Act that deals with audio-video linkages at correctional facilities, the department has stated that it intends rolling out the system in 47 courts and 36 correctional facilities. So this is one of the issues that the committee may want to oversee. Further, the other bill that has to still be finalized is the Criminal Procedure Forensic Amendment Bill. The previous ad hoc committee, apart from the time constraints, raised various issues regarding the bill, such as the implementation plan and whether there were sufficient resources to implement this, and regarding skills. So this is one of the issues that the committee may consider when deliberating on this bill, as to whether the issues raised by the ad hoc committee have been dealt with. The other issue is improving court efficiency. One of the major areas of the department's work is reduction in case backlogs. Now, despite numerous efforts made and various projects, case backlogs have not decreased. With the latest statistics available, case backlogs have gone up from 39,736 in the previous year to 42,495. Further, the number of outstanding matters on the court roll have increased. This is of concern because this has been a key issue, and there's been numerous efforts put in place in this regard, but still there's not been much success in this regard. However, regarding other issues such as meeting targets, the NPA has consistently met its conviction rate targets, and from the latest information we have, court hours have increased. With regard to increasing the number of legal aid personnel, it's noted that there's a huge problem in filling vacancies. At present, the NPA has a target of 2 prosecutors per court, and the latest statistics that we have is that the average rate is 1.5 prosecutors per district court and 2.1 prosecutors per regional court, while the legal aid board has 0.9 practitioners per district court and 0.15 practitioners per regional court. The department has implemented the occupational specific dispensation to deal with this issue of retaining and recruiting legal personnel. However, the committee needs to monitor the effect of the OSD and whether it has met its target. So the issue regarding SONA from this is if the NPA and the legal aid board already have issues in recruiting of personnel, if the SONAR speaks to increasing the number of personnel, will these two bodies be able to meet this target? With regard to transformation of the judiciary, this has received much media attention. However, this is not a new issue and has been mentioned in the 2004, 2005, and 2008 SONAR. Some of the issues that were mentioned this year was ensuring that the composition of the bench reflects the racial and gender demographics of the country, enhancing judicial independence and entrenching internal systems of judicial accountability, and thirdly, ensuring justice for all. This issue is not merely about demographics, but according to the SONAR, it speaks about transforming society and the entire justice system. With regard to the first issue of the composition of the bench, at present, there are 55% of judges are black and 45% are white, while 79.5% are men and 20.5% are women. With regard to magistrates, 54% are black and 46% are white, while 67% are men and 33% are women. So it's clear that while progress has been made with regard to transformation, there's much still has to be done, especially regarding appointment of female judicial officers. The latest information we received from the department was that one female judicial officer has been permanently appointed to the bench, and 20 officers have been appointed to acting judges. Further, the JSC had called for further female candidates to be nominated, and they will deliberate on this in July 2009. The other issues is that there's legislation that has been passed that seeks to address the issues of broadening the pool of candidates available to appointment to the bench. One is the South African Judicial Education Institute Act, which provides the Judicial Institute to train judicial officers, and the second one is the Jurisdiction of Regional Court Amendments Bill, which among its aims is to extend the civil jurisdiction of courts to create a career path for magistrates, which ultimately may result in them being appointed in the end. At present, the status of the bills is that these bills are not been fully implemented. The Judicial Education Institute Bill, with regard to this, the institute has not yet been established. With regards to the Regional Court Amendment Bill, the information that we just received recently was that the minister has consulted with the heads of courts on the 7th of June, and what has been agreed to was that the regional courts will have civil jurisdiction up to 300,000 rand, and they will, in terms of the implementation plan, 21 acting magistrates will be appointed from legal practitioners and senior magistrates with civil law experience. The department intends requesting that the president issue his proclamation in August 2009 for this act to be implemented. Regarding the issue of enhancing judicial independence and internal systems of judicial accountability, it was very difficult getting information as to what the department intends doing in this regard. During the budget hearings, the DG suggested that this will include engaging with the public on court decisions and deepening the public's understanding of the judicial process. The other issue is implementing the Judicial Service Commission Amendment Bill. This bill aims to promote transparency and deals with complaints against judges and establishes a register for judges. The status of this is that the previous minister Sirsby, submitted a code of judicial conduct to the Chief Justice for consideration in March 2009, and draft regulations have been submitted to the judiciary for consideration. The department intends asking that the president proclaim this bill in August 2009, so it should come into effect then if they are on target. Certain issues that the committee may consider in this regard is whether the programs established to fast-track the appointment of female judges are working, and secondly, they may want to oversee whether the department's targets for implementation of these various pieces of legislation are on time. with regard to the issue of addressing, ensuring full access of justice for all, on the second last slide, almost done, just this last, with regard to addressing equal distribution of court services, the department has made various steps in this regard, including redesignating of courts and ensuring that courts in rural areas and townships have better access to services. Further, regarding vulnerable groups, ensuring that women and children receive the services. One of the issues that needs to be highlighted is that previously they had specialist sexual offense courts, and recently it seems that the department has mainstream sexual offense courts. So the committee may want to inquire as to why this has been done and whether this is improving conviction rates or not. Lastly, the department intends introducing multilingualism in court, and this project will take place in this financial year and extend it to two courts per province. With regard to issues raised in the previous State of the Nation address, I will not address this, but the department has provided us extensive feedback, and this can be available to all committee members who request it. Thank you. It's Swan Isaac. Yes. There is a full document available on this, and I don't know if the members do have it, but the committee secretary will make it available.
Any revolutionary questions?
No.
Okay. Can you proceed to the next delegation? Maybe while you are sorting yourself, can I take this opportunity, members, to welcome the new members? Honorable Member Chief Pierre Solomisi and Honorable Member Pete Iswanya. Yes. And also to inform the committee that Honorable Member Kegane and Honorable Member Father Joseph are going to be out of the committee. So we'll be without them.
The number of the party works.
Yeah. And then proceed and tell us who you are, and then shoot and speak.
My name is Christine Silkstone. I'm a content advisor with the committee. I'm going to be looking at an overview of the ASMAL report, or the report of the Ad Hoc Committee on Chapter 9 and Associated Institutions. My presentation doesn't want to play on this computer, so I'm just going to speak to the handout that you've got, and I'm going straight to page 3 to start off with the second slide. The Ad Hoc Committee was established to inquire into the effectiveness, efficiency, and appropriateness of the institutions. It looked at all Chapter 9s, at the Public Service Commission, which is Chapter 10, the Financial and Fiscal Commission, which I think is Chapter 12, and as well as the National Youth Commission. But because our focus is on the CGE, the Human Rights Commission, and the Public Protector, I'm going to try and link it all to that. It produced this report at the end of July 2007, and so far the only we're still dealing with this on page 3, the second slide. Okay. It produced its report in July, and so far the only resolution or recommendation that has been adopted by the National Assembly is to establish a dedicated unit in the office of the Speaker to deal with the interactions with these institutions, or to coordinate all the interactions with these institutions. Now, when the committee met with all the institutions, it soon realized that there were a number of common themes. And I'm just going to run through them quickly and try and link them to our three institutions. The first one revolves around the constitutional and legal mandate of these institutions. Very often, the institutions displayed a poor understanding of their mandates. For example, when the CGE came, they really didn't seem to understand what they were doing. But to be fair to the CGE at that time, there was only one commissioner in the entire commission, the chairperson. So really, it was debatable whether there was, in fact, a commission. The common complaint of the institutions was that they lacked muscle to enforce, to get information, to do all sorts of things. But when the committee looked at their powers, the powers that the legislation had given them, in fact, they weren't using what had been given them. They had extensive powers of subpoena. They could do, some of them have search and seizure powers and so forth. They can initiate their own investigations. The CGE wasn't had interpreted its legislation to say that it didn't have that power. The public protector, for example, only used its power of subpoena to get information twice. The Human Rights Commission is still threatening to bring departments to take them to court to get information. And then another problem with them is that their enabling legislation is not in line with the present constitution. The legislation for the Human Rights Commission and for even the public protector and the CGE was all enacted before the 1996 constitution, and that's created certain kind of operational problems with regard to regulations in the Human Rights Commission. There are other things like the 1996 constitution gives the Human Rights Commission the duty to compile the socioeconomic reports. That isn't mentioned in the interim constitution, and isn't reflected in terms of their mandate in the enabling legislation. When the committee looked at it, they found, particularly around the Human Rights Commission, they found gaps. They felt that children, there wasn't, generally, there is no institution that deals with children. It has a dedicated focus on children. Disability was dealt with within the presidency, but there is no particular institution that has dedicated focus on disability. And the same around PIA, there's no information officer or information commissioner to help implement PIA. On the issues of budgets, this was an enormous concern to all the institutions. The arrangements around budgets vary. Some institutions have their own vote, like the Public Service Commission have their own vote. Others, like the CGE, R3, they transferred from the department. And they felt that this undermines their feeling of independence, because people seem to think that they are just a sort of an adjunct to the department. So the committee recommended that it felt that it would be appropriate if all these institutions were transferred to Parliament first. So that was its recommendation. Then the other gripe was around the amount that was being allocated to them. They felt that they were under-resourced, and that actually impacted on their ability to implement their mandates. The whole issue of appointments was enormous. The appointments process is not uniform or consistent amongst the institutions. There are also problems around staggering. The appointments aren't staggered, so you have a situation, which is going to happen with our Human Rights Commission, where almost the entire commission disappears. There's no continuity. There's a loss of institutional memory. The work comes to a bit of a grinding standstill. You have to get people going again, and so it felt that this wasn't desirable at all. And it's recommended that that legislation actually deal with this. There has also been tremendous delays in appointing, and the source of the delays have been, and I'm going to here refer to the CGE, it was a combination. It was Parliament was at fault, the executive was at fault, and what happened was for 14 months the CGE didn't have any commissioners, which meant that really crippled that particular institution for 14 months. They have a new set of commissioners, and I think the Deputy Minister mentioned that there have been three vacancies, there have been three resignations, and that includes the chairperson. There was also, the report also picked up that the appointment of chairs is inconsistent. Within the Human Rights Commission, for example, they have a practice of the commissioners appoint the chairs, whereas with the CGE, the president appoints, and that creates enormous delays in appointments. So
last year when we met, the year before last, when we met with the CTE, it came to our attention that the chairperson was acting, was an acting chairperson. The commissioners had basically asked her to act in that thing. And I think that there was an intervention process, and eventually the president did appoint the chairperson. The relationship with Parliament, I think JJ touched on that there are enormous problems around how to, around the relationship with Parliament. At the moment, they report to us, generally the portfolio committees, on their annual reports once a year. I don't think it has been a practice for them to come and give us information around their budgets and strategic plans. When we asked all the commissions, they were really keen to be involved. They were willing to report. They want to have a really active engagement with Parliament. And this is also particularly so around these special reports. For example, the socioeconomic rights report. They produce these reports, but how do they bring them to Parliament? And how does Parliament actually facilitate a proper engagement with them? And the AFMOL report felt was vital in terms of enhancing their oversight, Parliament's oversight capacity, providing them, Parliament, with an independent source of information that it could use in its oversight role. And of course, there the recommendation around the unit is vital. It's picked up on various things around the institutional governance arrangements. Internal tensions are a big problem. So you find that there's disputes or disagreements amongst the commissioners themselves. There'll be disagreements amongst the commissioners and the secretariat. And it can really cripple. In fact, almost all the institutions had some kind of problem. And it can cripple the commission at some stage. It was unhappy with the disclosure mechanisms for commissioners and with secretariats. Remuneration was an issue. It's not standard. I think commissioners in the South African Human Rights Commission, the Public Protector, earn more than those to the CGE, and that was an enormous source of unhappiness. There is Section 2195 of the Constitution that provides for Parliament to implement or to enact framework legislation, and that hasn't been done. And the AFMOL report is quite critical of Parliament in delaying in enacting that legislation. As an alternative, it suggested that we amend the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers Act to allow for these commissioners and the Public Protector to, well, in fact, the Public Protector does fall within that, but the commissioners to fall within that. And then it was quite critical around accessibility. They said most of the commissions are largely urban-based, and they need to do work to move out to rural areas. On those things of specific recommendations, I'm just going to quickly brief touch on the Human Rights Commission and CGE. The enabling legislation needs to be brought in line with the Constitution. With the Human Rights Commission, it wanted at least two additional commissioners, one to deal with disability and one to deal with the PIA, the Information Commissioner. It did a costing exercise and found that it would be cheaper to have a dedicated Information Commissioner within the Commission using those resources than using setting up a separate office outside of the Commission. Again, the whole thing of children was important. They asked the Human Rights Commission to strengthen its focus on children. But there was a kind of complicated thing where the National Youth Commission's mandate was going to be expanded and to include children. Then ultimately that would all fall away and it would get moved into the Human Rights Commission, into the single national human rights body which would incorporate all these things. With the CGE, mentioned the enabling legislation, it picked up on the internal tensions, and this still seems to be a problem. I'm going to just quickly mention that. And it suggested that eventually that the CGE be amalgamated into this huge single human rights body. And it's quite controversial, that recommendation. The Public Protector, remember this had happened just after there had been a process around the ad hoc. There was an ad hoc committee on operational problems within the Public Protector's office because of the dispute between the Public Protector and the Deputy Public Protector. So a lot of the focus was around those kind of issues. Importance was it must increase its public awareness.
that participation in the collaboration structure, that there is a forum in which all of these commissions collaborate and they work consistently and constructively together. Staff retention was a problem. And then I've mentioned on the final overriding recommendation of the UFO report was for the single human rights body. And then just a concluding remark for the committee. We've mentioned that that the Human Rights Commission is and the Public Protector, both of their terms of office are coming to an end at the end of September, the Public Protector the 1st of October. And there's a process around that. The Human Rights Commission will come to we've been told will come to our committee. The Public Protector is going to an ad hoc committee. Around the CGE, there is a process within the deputy, it's just been dealt with by the previous deputy speaker around the problems within the CGE's office. I don't know what the status of that particular process is, and it might be useful for this committee to get that status report before we bring the CGE in. All I know is that there was a member of our committee who was involved, Ms. Johnson, and Mr. Johnson, the CFO from the Department of Justice, was seconded to the CGE to deal with the financial arrangements. He's now back with the Justice Department, so I presume the secondment arrangement has fallen apart. And the chairperson has resigned, and there are vacancies. So there's some problems there. So that's really just my two concluding remarks on the ASMA report. And then just if you want... I think that it would be useful for our committee to get a briefing or some kind of status or to speak with the speaker with regard to what is happening before we bring them back to us, just around the enabling legislation. There is draft legislation. It has been circulated to the chairs of the commission. They have made their comments, but it needs to be incorporated. So it's in the pipeline. Where it is in the pipeline, we just maybe need to push the department to tell us. For the CGE, it's updating the Human Rights Commission, yes. Okay.
Thank you very much, Christine.
Yes, Christine. Can I just make one other thing? This is a quick overview. If you look at this huge thing, Annexures 2 and 3 give you quite a nice snapshot of the appointments process and mandates of the ASMA report. So if you want a quick reference, Annexures 2 and 3 are quite useful.
Three submissions. Policy initiatives on one side, judicial transformation and revamp of the justice system, chapter 9 institution. That's the kind of interface that has been going on now. Are there major issues of the world? Actually, upfront, what I'm thinking, what I remember is that, in particular, the policy initiatives. To me, it seems to affirm a view of a mid-once mission where we spend time, not fully, to interrogate these issues so that we formulate a program of the year that is actually grounded on them. But we can't do that without an in-depth interaction with them. But I'll be advised by the committee.
Okay, when you start speaking about the chapter 9
institution. The three were presented and more interaction. We must understand that it's a natural assembly station today. Not any of those things will not be there on time. But if there are major issues that we have to then let's listen to them because when the committee is decided so that there's a clear way forward, it has to inform the people.
It's just a small point, and that is, I think Gillian referred to a couple of updates on her slides, like the number of cases and the backlogs and that will be useful to get that information as well. If we could get that, that will help us update in backlogs and things. Thanks.
Just one thing to add to the team that's
Parliament adopted the resolution on the very last day of the last Parliament to set up the unit in the Speaker's office. There was another leg to that resolution. It didn't resolve, but it noted and we recommended what I consider to be that most important recommendation of the Ad Hoc Assessment, and that is that the funds for the chapter 9 should no longer go through the Department of Conduit, but it should be moved to Parliament vote. And the reason for that is quite simply that departments which transfer money to these institutions think they are therefore their agents. The minute you are the person who spends the money, you think that person is nothing more than but your agent. And this is the point on which the Treasury agrees. We have to pull back. And that should be implemented.
I think in the last committee meeting, we were also advised that there was an insertion into the federal regulations to assess that the independence of the chapter 9. Christian, do you want to say something?
I'd just like to add two things. I had a kind of possible focus areas, and most of it's been covered, but two things that I did pick up is the DG mentioned a review of the civil justice system. Now, this is completely new, and it will be quite interesting to hear from the department what they plan. I think the only thing that we managed to pick up is that it's been referred to the South African Law Reform Commission for them to start looking at. It's a review of the civil justice system. So it's completely new. We know nothing about it. It's never, well. And then the last thing around the transformation is that there is a draft policy document, which or discussion document, which is with the minister at the moment, and perhaps it would be useful for the committee to see it as soon as it becomes available. So that was just my two. The last point is that there's a draft policy or discussion document around transformation that is apparently with the minister at the moment, and it would be useful for the committee to perhaps see that once it becomes available, once it's finalized.
Okay. Can I propose a number of that? We close this discussion at that point, but commit ourselves on the table to sit down, take into account the inputs of this committee, put together a proposal going forward, in a fine, advised by your input here. Can we leave it at that point? Anything else?
I don't know if we are moving to point number 4 on the agenda, the program for next week. Yeah, you had one. Just to say that we were intending to call the public protector next week on Tuesday, if they are available. And the Human Rights Commission on Wednesday, next week. I have already communicated with them, but they said that they are going to respond at least by today. So hopefully, maybe after lunch, you will be getting further information. I think I will be sending SMSs to all members to just let you know what is happening for next week.
What will be our objective?
First of all, we will be dealing with the budget issues, strategic plan, and then given that commissioners at the Human Rights Commission will be leaving soon, their end of our plans, just for them to brief us on the challenges that they have experienced in the past, and maybe just for them to, you know, just propose or if they have anything that you know, they want the committee to do for them going forward, for the new commissioners going forward.
Any different views? Yeah, go ahead. Thank you, honourable members. It was a very useful interaction. Let's look forward to meet again with the Human Rights Commission and Public Protector. Thank you very much for the question. Well prepared work.
The issue of the department and related to the programme. Have we got a date when they're going to do that for us? Because I think that would be important to program next week.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, sorry.
I think also, remember, that is very clear. If we agree that legislation is going to be the bulk, the big bulk of our work, that presentation is very urgent. Can you find one a way of putting it in those 2 days? Thanks very much. Can you leave it there? Thanks very much. Thanks for reporting. Thanks for your well-organized presentation.